Coming up on Simply Superior.
Simply Superior, news and issues from a superior point of view.
Could you imagine getting fined $17,000 for violating the stay-at-home order? It happened right in the Twin Ports during the last major flu pandemic in 1918.
It was the 10th of October when the Superior decided to go under a ban, and it was the next day in Duluth. And this affected churches, schools, theaters, lodges.
Then, keep my radio on. Everything's closed and events are canceled, but there's a whole lineup of live local activities going on your computer. Those stories and a roundup of regional COVID-19 news after this.
News and issues from a superior point of view.
Welcome to Simply Superior. I'm Robin Washington. Are you shut in with nothing to do? Well, yes, you should be at home, but don't say there's nothing to do. First of all, you're listening to this broadcast, where we've made it a point to bring you some of the concerts and events otherwise canceled during the COVID-19 pandemic. In this program, we'll introduce you to a brand new online venue that's become the region's go-to spot for things you thought you'd never see on your computer. But first, we'll take a jaunt back in time, way before computers. Tony Durkins has written or co-written over 24 books. He's also the publisher at Zenith City Press, so it's not surprising the books he's written are largely about Duluth and the Twin Ports, and particularly the history of the area. Those include Lost Duluth and Crossing the Canal, both finalists for the Minnesota Book Award. His latest, coming out on April 15th, which used to be tax day, is Duluth, an Urban Biography. In that telling, he includes the story of the Twin Ports in the 1918 flu pandemic. Tony joins us by phone from Duluth. Welcome to Simply Superior.
Good morning. Thank you, Robin. Thanks for having me.
You're quite welcome. So when you started writing this book, you probably did not have the pandemic or a pandemic top of mind.
Yeah, I started working on the book about a year and a half ago. And what the book does is cover the entire history of Duluth. And we go back 2.6 billion years to the okay. Precambrian lava flows that formed the bed of Lake Superior, right up to the recent mayoral election in November here. So there's not a deep dive into the flu 1918. Of course, 1918, just a pivotal date in Twin Ports history. Not only do we have a bunch of soldiers off to war in Europe, but we had the fires of 1918 that coincided with the flu epidemic when it reached the Twin Ports in the fall of 1918. So, yeah, it's a fascinating topic where we touch on it briefly in the book. So if you want to talk about that flu, it was a strange time here.
Not to jump ahead, we're going to talk about the book you have and about the particular area that concerns us right now, but has this given any thought to maybe writing a book, Twin Ports 1918? It sounds like there's so much going on there.
Yes, there's so much going on. There was a couple of books published last year about the fire, but not about the flu in particular. You could take that whole period between 1918 and 1920, and then you've got Duluth's most tragic moment in June 1920,
right,
with the lynchings, and throughout 1920 and even before that, we had trouble with our corruption in our police department. In fact, a month after the lynching, Duluth's chief of police, John Murphy, and 11 others were arrested for smuggling whiskey across the Canadian border. We also had 15 Duluth cops on leave for drinking and gambling. And we had to fire another 18 that didn't pass the civil service exam. So Duluth, in between 1918 and 1920, probably its most tumultuous period.
Well, again, not to jump ahead, but I was wondering if the lynching was informed in some way by the pandemic, by the fires, by all the turmoil that was going on shortly before.
I couldn't really find a connection to that. 1920 was kind of the last throes of the Spanish flu epidemic. that started in 1918 and by the spring of 1920 was kind of the final wave had gone through. Prohibition started as well. So certainly what the communities had gone through, they'd been gone through a lot of turmoil. So you might, you know, well, I can't find a direct connection there. You can certainly think that, that the Duluth Superior area, like the rest of the country, was kind of on edge.
Mm-hmm. One thing, you said Spanish flu, and of course that's not your term. You're just using the term that was out there.
Exactly. We don't want to call it the Spanish flu. Other than the same thing, we can't call this the Chinese coronavirus. It's just the convenient term at the time.
Mm-hmm. And I'm looking at Snopes says something. It's actually not their article, so it doesn't have their imprimatur on it, but an article they thought was interesting enough to post. And number one of misconceptions is the pandemic originated in Spain, to which it answers, no one believes the so-called Spanish flu originated in Spain.
Right. And from what I understand, it's 1918, and Spain was neutral during World War One. You had these other countries like England, France, and Germany that were all underreporting the epidemic. So the numbers in Spain, which was doing more accurate reporting, seemed higher. And that's one of the reasons. And it was also, back in that period of our history, you wanted to pin something on another group if you could, especially if they were in political disagreement with you. Mm-hmm. And so this is all part of that. Back in 1918. So Spain and the Spanish are vilified for something they had absolutely no fault whatsoever of their own in. It's fascinating how it all works out.
And the numbers have a correlation to what happened here. So tell us about that. How did it manifest itself?
Well, it came to us in by late September 1918 when we started. It was the 10th of October when the Superior decided to go under a ban, and it was the next day in Duluth. And this affected churches, schools, theaters, lodges. We're very popular at the times, your Elks Club, Rotary, and Masons and things. There was a whole bunch of those fraternal groups that met all the time. Those were all forbidden. The restaurants remained open. Both the Twin Ports had already voted themselves dry, so there were no saloons or everything was limited. Funerals were limited to members of the deceased. But yet, industry roared on. People still went by the thousands to the shipyards to work and ate in cafeterias together. All right, so we did some of this good, some of it bad. There's also, this is one of the interesting thing about the Duluth ban, they limited the streetcars to 85 passengers, yet Duluth's largest streetcar only had 48 seats in it.
but seriously, we have the vision back then of people hanging off of them and riding
exactly.
on a roof. And frankly, what you can see of pictures of trains today in India, and India is dealing with the exact same sort of thing.
Exactly. It's the same thing. It's just like you have, we have to remember Duluth in 1918, just shy of 100,000 people. In fact, the estimates, we thought we had about 115, but when the count for the 1920 census came in, we had just under 99,000. Same thing, Superior was expected to hit 50,000 by 1920, and it was less than 40. Of course, your city itself and your local boosters club, like your chambers of commerce, like to go with the highest number possible, right? So this was kind of over-reporting by the city, under-reporting. But the flu did stop, 1920 flu, accurate counting in the census. So there's something that reflects on us from today. Luckily, we can fill out the census online, mail it in, whereas in 1920, it relied on people knocking door by door.
Mm-hmm. And going back to those streetcars, back then you still had horses, of course, and you had a growing number of cars, but nowhere near today, and that would have been the way to get around.
Exactly. Yeah, right. The wealthy in 1918 had automobiles.
Right.
And the rest rode the streetcars. The horses were phasing out. The streetcars were electrified in 1890, but there were still some, especially teamsters, literally driving teams of horses carrying heavy wagon loads back and forth. So, yeah, you had this combination of ways to get around. And certainly with the majority, I think over 60% of the population identifying as recent immigrants. Mm-hmm. And most of these immigrants came from countries they were poor, unskilled laborers, who found works in the various mills and factories along the water. And the streetcars was how they got around, how they got to work.
So how long of a period did that happen? Or
the ban lasted 6 weeks in Superior, 7 in Duluth. And you can look at some of the statistics and say, you know, it worked out pretty good for us. During that peak, 325 people died in Duluth. But our safety commissioner at the time, Bernard Silverstein, looking at the national data, set our per capita death rates set well below the national average. And he said, if we had the same percentage as in some eastern cities, more than 700 would have died in Duluth. Right. Over in Superior, 39 official deaths, over 1,600 flu cases. That's just 1918. Right. So when you look at St. Paul during 1918, their ban only lasted 8 days. Over 1,100 people died. Hmm. Minneapolis limited their ban to 30 days, about 4 to 5 weeks. 944 died. Granted, we have a smaller population base. Not that much smaller back then. Right, it was, but only 327 died in Duluth by contrast. So you can see that following those guidelines as best you could.
Mm-hmm. There's also some question over exactly what the numbers were. So first of all, the world population was something like 1.8 billion, not what we are today at all. And I'm reading one account that says 500 million affected by it or mm-hmm. who got it. So that's, a quarter right there.
And then percent of those died, 50 million died.
You have the 50 million. I've seen some that have as low as half of that or maybe even lower. I don't know what sort of method was used and what sort of count. But
exactly. And we're talking inaccurate count. The Native American population took a significant hit. But because of underreported, we don't know what the percentage was because not all Native Americans filled out the census or mm-hmm. Locally what happened in a lot of times, those who were in mixed families, say in Fond du Lac, would fill out the census and say they're French rather than Native American. And so you get skewed numbers. So we don't have the accuracy of those, numbers that we would hope we'd have today. One of the things I thought was interesting, John Barry, author of a book on the 1918 flu, said this the other day, that the COVID-19, what we're dealing with now, is less deadly than the 1918 flu, which is actually H1N1, but much more contagious. Mm-hmm. Right? So I think these measures we're doing today, just the wise, common sense thing to do, really.
Right. We're speaking with Tony Durkins. He's the publisher at Zenith City Press, whose latest book is Duluth, an Urban Biography. It's due out the middle of this month, and it includes information about the 1918 flu pandemic and how it affected the Twin Ports. So we had public buildings close and a form of sheltering in place. Do I understand there was a fine for violating it?
The Duluth ban. Mm-hmm. Had a fine up to $1,000, which would be over $17,000 in today's dollars. Or you could be sent to the county jail or the county work farm for up to 85 days. I saw one instance of a violation. The gentleman who ran the Empress Theater decided to have a show one day, and the word got out, and he was fined. That's a pretty swift penalty, $17,000, when you think of it.
Right.
Whatever you're doing, you're not going to be able to make $17,000.
No, not then. And then the alternative of going to jail is sort of defeating the purpose, right? Because
right,
now
right.
You're going to a place where
you're
possibly
more likely to catch it. Yeah. Moose Lodge in West Duluth and Camel's Lodge down on Superior Street became flu hospitals, as did the original armory, which was by then the Shrine Auditorium, the 1896 armory that's on First Street, also pressed into service as this, because, of course, our own armory and St. Louis County Courthouse were being used, lost their homes in the 1918 fire. That was actually the fire. The flu ban in Duluth went into effect on October 11th, and on October 12th, the fire started. Hmm. So you had that little 1-2 punch right there. And it's the same time the war's wrapping up. Yeah, it's a time of chaos. But it's just fascinating to me that the flu and the fire hit almost simultaneously.
The natural question is, was there any connection? But I don't even want to ask the question, because what could there possibly have been as a connection?
Well, yeah, and a lot of what's sad is a lot of these people that were displaced or injured because of the fire ended up dying of the flu.
So a connection in terms of result, not cause.
Right. A lot of these people, they set up makeshift camps out of tents, mm-hmm. where people were living in what they called the burn zone between Cloquet and Duluth and the surrounding areas that had been burned out by the fire.
Anything on the Superior side?
As far as with the fire?
Yeah.
Not so much.
Or no. Camps or just people migrating over?
The 1918 flu seemed to hit Duluth much harder than Superior. And conversely, when we get to the January and February of 1920, that last wave of the flu through the U.S., Superior much harder than Duluth.
Mm-hmm.
So, in fact, Bernard Silverstein, the safety commissioner, talked of you know, maybe stopping traffic between Duluth and Superior at one time.
Really? We have rumors of that today.
Exactly. So it's just, this is the thing about history, you know. Doesn't necessarily repeat itself, but it paraphrases itself quite often.
Right.
You know, it goes around, comes around. There's a lot of lessons in our history. They might not correlate exactly from the past to how they do today.
But some things are going to be the same because the situations are the same and the relationships, right? So the Duluth-Superior relationship in terms of traveling between the towns, obviously the same bridges weren't there, but you still had to get there. I want to bring this up right now to clarify something because I don't want to mislead people, but on last week's show we mentioned that there was a rumor that cars were being stopped on a bridge, and Mayor Jim Payne of Superior said, no, that's not happening. You can go over. It's fine. However, no sooner did he say that than Rhode Island actually did start stopping cars with New York license plates. And even though the states aren't contiguous, by the way, they got Connecticut in between them. So, yes, it seems like you're pointing out there is a basis in history of these things happening. It's not our imagination that they could happen. And something that may seem unthinkable one day, a couple days later, is general practice.
Absolutely. And when we look back at 1918, there's one bridge, the interstate bridge from Rice's Point to Connor's Point, that brings streetcars and automobiles and pedestrians back and forth between there. The jobs are flowing both ways. A lot of people in Superior working in Duluth, not as many in Duluth working in Superior. So we've got these two communities going back and forth. And at the time, remember, we're only 10 years out from being the busiest port in the world, surpassing New York, right? I think by 1920, we're back down to second place, but still, we're the largest inland port in the world. In fact, the first few cases in 1918, the majority of the cases they were seeing were sailors on ore carriers, and then passengers from passenger trains from elsewhere bringing it in, right? And that was reported in early November of 1918. So this is when we're not quite a month into the ban at this time, the stay-at-home orders, and you know, this is how it's tracking. But you know, they pretty much stopped looking at that after a week or so, mm-hmm. because it's here now. You know, what they were doing back then is basically, if you close that bridge, you close commerce between two communities that relied on each other for jobs and their economy.
So again, an echo to today. At the end of the day, economics and the economy is a human construct, right? We can invent money, we can invent a Federal Reserve, or we can get rid of it, we can have a gold standard, silver, whatever. But those are all things that human beings can decide.
We seem to be worried about, you know, how will the economy survive, how will these man-made constructs survive? And I think we should just more worry about
how we're going to survive.
Right. We'll work that all out later.
Right.
Right. That's the way I've seen it. And I've seen this in when I study history before. There will be lows, there will be highs.
Right. We're talking to Tony Durkins, a publisher at Zenith City Press, whose latest book, Duluth, an Urban Biography, is due out in the middle of the month. And it includes information about the 1918 flu pandemic and how it affected the Twin Ports. What's your biggest takeaway from the history and maybe how it relates to what we're experiencing right now?
Well, I think the lesson we can take is, when you look at how Duluth and Superior handled it back then with these bans that stayed in place for 6-7 weeks, as opposed to other communities that eased up right away because of economic pressures, like in St. Paul in particular, was because of economic pressures. The people, the communities that followed those guidelines to distance themselves, to not go to the theater or to church and everything, they did much better. It's not the same disease. We can't just apply the 1918 to 1920 epidemic on top of this one and say this is what will happen. But my biggest takeaway from this is one of those big moments. Our community, the Twin Ports, have been through many of these big moments. And we've come out of it. We've come out strong on these things. And from studying Duluth Superior history, one of the things I've noted is that both communities always do better when they're working together, hand in glove. It was the Twin Ports. We went together to come up with that name in 1910, to pick that name, because we wanted something that showed how unified we were. And I think I see that a little today in Mayor Payne and Larson coming together over the refinery issue. And I think if Duluth and Superior, you know, the big takeaway for me is we've been through things that are similar, and we'll get through this as well.
Great. Well, on that optimistic note, Tony Durkins is the publisher at Zenith City Press, whose latest book, Duluth, an Urban Biography, is due out in the middle of this month. It includes information about the 1918 flu pandemic and how it affected Twin Ports. And how can we get a copy of the book? Because bookstores are closed at the moment.
Please visit us at Zenith City Press online at zenithcity.com, and I can send you, you can pre-order a signed author copy.
We wouldn't want to miss that. Thank you for joining us, Tony Durkins.
Well, thanks for having me this morning, Robin, and thanks to your audience at Wisconsin Public Radio.
You're quite welcome. We'll be back after this. Welcome back to Simply Superior. I'm Robin Washington. So after the orders to stay home began and the cancellation started, who got the idea to put concerts and spoken word events online? Well, a lot of people, but an idea is one thing and making it happen is another. Matt Dressel is the programming manager at Zeitgeist Cinema 2, and he's also programmer, coordinator, chief cat herder at Virtual Duluth, the region's online venue to where many of those concerts have migrated. Welcome to Simply Superior, Matt.
Oh, thank you for having me.
So what exactly is your title?
I mean, I don't know if I really have a title as much as just page creator or group creator or whatever. I mean, I'm just the wrangler. I'm the person that gets this stuff together. And
I was right when I said chief cat herder, right?
Yeah, exactly. It's growing so quick. There's so many people coming from all directions, and everybody's just having such a good time that it's just blown up. And I've had to bring on, you know, a moderator to help me with the workload, just because it's something that has kind of taken on a life of its own.
Mm-hmm. So don't be immodest about this. Was this your idea or a group effort or?
So it was my idea that I had right at the beginning of all this happening. And the reason was is because I have a lot of friends who are artists. And so aside from just seeing, you know, the unemployment rise for other friends that I know, I was really seeing a lot of pain from my artist friends because basically their work just evaporated. Mm-hmm. Any live performances were gone, any scheduled showings, anything like that. Everything just in a second just went away. So I'm just seeing this massive like depression going on, and everybody's just really sad, and I'm hurting too because I'm also an artist and working in film.
You've just had a film come out recently, something about a coffee shop, right?
Yes, yeah, I just had a film called Just Coffee that was running the film festival circuit, and I actually shot it over in Superior with the Duluth crew. It's been tough, and so watching all of this happen, watching my friends deal with this stuff, I started to see people doing a lot more virtual content and kind of going live, and I basically couldn't keep track of it anymore. It was just too much, and this was all in just the span of like a few hours, and I was like, somebody needs to put this together and organize it and make sure that people know where to look. And instead of just waiting for it to happen, I was like, well, I mean, I might as well. And I just made this group, shared it with my friends, and expected it to, you know, kind of be this thing that modestly trucks along. And then all of a sudden, it just caught on, and everybody wanted to participate. Everybody wanted to watch, and now we're just crossing 5,000 members.
Well, and as I said, right, everybody, a lot of people got the idea to go online because that's what you do these days, but organizing it into some form where you knew what was going to happen when or what was coming up, or just organizing it, was, I think, what made the difference with what you did. It's 5,000...
We're just crossing 5,000 members today.
Okay, so these are people who've liked the page or joined up. What does membership mean?
Membership is basically just that, yeah, they follow the page, they interact with the page. Yeah, there's no costs for Virtual Duluth. It's actually really important to me that this group doesn't become, I don't want it to be just an advertising platform. It's really important to me that artists and businesses both reach out to the community and use this as a platform to give something to the community without an expectation that they're going to get something back. And I think that's actually just been the best model to follow, because right, then people are more willing to support your business, to see that you're positive and that you're willing to give something to the community. And it's much better than the requests I've had to just throw your logo up and say, hey, can you give us money? Right now, this time is about coming together. It's about, I think we're really learning that our local communities are the ones that are the most important. And Virtual Duluth is really all about that. Like, it's really about giving something to the community so everybody can stay sane, essentially. Mm-hmm.
At some point, these artists do have to make a living, though.
That is correct. And I think that people understand that. And I think that there just has to be kind of a give and take, where an artist comes out and you see so many artists right now performing, you know, live shows. And I think they just really want the opportunity to reach people right now. They want that connection.
Well, they got to stay public, right? Yeah. I mean, if nobody,
yeah, exactly.
If people 6-7 weeks goes by and you haven't been out there, it certainly wouldn't help.
Yeah, exactly. And it shows that, I mean, I think the biggest thing about Virtual Duluth is it's shown the ingenuity of so many people. And because you have to be really creative, you have to come up with an idea and a way to stand out. And you have to come up with a like authentic and genuine idea that really connects with the community. And I've noticed a lot more businesses and a lot more artists putting more work into how they're marketing their live events, coming up with more creative live events. It's a really unique, fun movement, and I think that any artist would probably feel regret not being involved in this new evolution of entertainment and art. I don't know. It's a really cool thing to see happening and evolving.
Right. We're speaking with Matt Dressel, the creator of Virtual Duluth, the region's online performance venue, or at least that's what I'm going to call it. And where can we find it, by the way?
You can find it at facebook.com/groups/virtualduluth. And I'd imagine if you Google us, you should be able to find.
Right. I had no trouble finding. Believe me, I think it found me. So you mentioned businesses getting involved. So what's their involvement?
So I think that this is a really unique opportunity for businesses to bring people inside their business and see a side of it that they haven't seen before. And so I noticed a lot of places are doing tours or Q&As. Like, there's a lot of breweries that are giving tours and showing how they make things. I think it's just a unique opportunity for us to get to know the businesses, but especially the people behind the businesses. I think that once this is all done, like, even though we're all separated, we're coming together in this really big way, and I think we're going to leave this quarantine knowing a lot more people than we knew going in. And I think it's just because of neat things like this, and we'll have basically faces that we can put to all of these businesses, and I think that's invaluable.
And new relationships. One of the things you said a minute ago was people are coming up with new and creative ways to be noticed. Have you told anybody so far, no, you can't do that?
Just advertising. It's just not the vibe that I'm going for with the site. And so that's the main thing I've had to moderate. When you're dealing with anything online, it's like I have to deal with, you know, people who just put up memes and political posts. We're an entirely positive community. My idea was that it would be something that you could get away from all of this madness, you know, that you wouldn't have to worry about going into this group and seeing...
Getting into an argument in the comments, right?
Yeah, exactly, exactly. It's a place to escape. So no, as far as like content goes, it's not my goal to tell somebody what they can and can't do. I think that's, you know, that's going to end up being Facebook's goal if they go too far. But like, I'm not going to sit there and say like, no, you can't express yourself in this way. And mainly I kind of like watching what people come up with. Mm-hmm. And I don't think the restriction should be on their content as much as, you know, their message and what are they trying to achieve with Virtual Duluth. You know, when a post comes up, we have to approve it. It used to be the case where it would just go up, but once we started to grow into the thousands, it had to be something where we really needed to approve each one. So if there's a post that seems like it's borderline or we can't quite figure out like what the tone is or what the actual message, we'll talk about it. And, you know, we look at every single thing that gets posted, and we're really just trying to give a good representation of the overall community. Mm-hmm. We want everybody to be represented there.
I have to chuckle when you say it used to be that you could put anything on. Used to be. You're talking about something 3 weeks old here.
I know. I think we're in that, like, weird stage where time has no meaning anymore.
No, it doesn't.
We're all just kind of getting through this together and asking everybody to remind us what day it is.
right.
As I'm saying that right now, I can't even remember what day it is. So it's
right.
Yeah.
Again, we're speaking with Matt Dressel, the creator of Virtual Duluth, the region's online performance venue. Are the concerts and performances archived forever, like so much stuff on Facebook?
Yes. As far as I know, as long as the person who records it sets their settings at the beginning to save, there will always be a record.
Right.
And that's actually been really good because, yeah, people have missed certain performances, or I've done three trivia nights, and those have been really great because if you miss the trivia night, it's all just basically, you know, it could just be played as a pre-recorded game. Like, you could watch it later and just play along. And that's what people have been doing. People have watch parties. I noticed that the watch party feature on Facebook has popped up a lot on Virtual Duluth, where people will, you know, watch something in sync with one another. That's become pretty big.
All right. Well, in your 3 weeks of what seems like forever, you've already gotten a greatest hits reel, or at least some of your favorites. So let's take a listen to some of them.
Woo-hoo, it's Tuesday. Welcome back to the island. Stella, what you doing, girl?
Making lemon grab.
Well, yeah, lemon grab. Do you guys know lemon grab? All right, so today, all right, we've been down here in the city. We moved on up to the Renaissance Festival. And now I thought we would go up here, up into this little village up here. It's like a fishing
village.
Okay,
well, it's labeled Ampersand Island, Captain Surprise, Live Drawing and Watercolor Painting. What's going on here?
So this is artist Joe Klander, who's just this amazing personality. There's been a short documentary made about him because he's just such an interesting person. But every day he's been doing these live illustrations, and he tells kind of like a little story as he goes, and he does voices, and it's a lot of fun, and people look forward to it. And like I said, Joe's just a great guy all around anyway. So it's really great to have him as part of Virtual Duluth as like a daily thing going on.
Did he find you or did you find him?
I think that we were talking on a thread at one point. A bunch of people on Virtual Duluth were talking about what they wanted to see. And Joe just stuck out in my head as, well, I really like to see something from him. And I think I tagged him, and then we talked via a message, just kind of like, you know, what can I do? A lot of people come to me and they ask, like, what can I do for the page? And I try my hardest to work with people to, like, figure out exactly how best to reach their audience. But that's like a whole different facet of Virtual Duluth, which is just figuring out the events themselves.
All right. The next one is by Seyi Olenoiwe. I do know Daniel. I don't know if that's, it's got to be the same. You tell me what the connection is, but here I'll call it up first. It says music video challenge. So that's Daniel Olenoiwe singing, and his wife Sandra is dancing. I think she's singing too, and looks like their young one. Tell me more about this.
I absolutely love this. This is something that Daniel put together where basically he has one of his amazing songs, and he made a music video and basically challenged people to dance and sing, and it's already been shared. I think at least four or five different covers of this music video have been done already. And it's just people putting this music on and dancing to it and having fun. And it's exactly the type of positive message that we're all about.
Great. Let's listen to a little bit more of it. JG with the goody goody master. Shady and we goody goody rappers. Work hard so we don't work backwards. Still bad girl, bring it back up. Soundtrack to my life, feel very dumb. Most rap guys leave quick as they come. Pick up the lid of my bigger vision. Still couldn't foresee what Jehovah has done. Pray for the truth and the flood came. Gotta stay in tune with his love, man. Some days I sing in my old ways. Gotta give praise to my old age. Even in a rush, I slow pace. Gotta stay fresh, no Colgate. No competition, minores. It's the end of the road, like bro say. Well, I like his little plug for turning the radio up because that is what we do. And I also like the idea that this is so wholesome. I didn't hear any words that couldn't be broadcast. So congratulations. You hit community standards wonderfully there. So the next one is Tractor Talk with Truman. And I see we also have a chat.
Don't worry. Truman's getting his setup set up. And we'll start right at 3, but we're just making sure our set is the way that we want it.
So I'm looking at a young child who's got his toy tractor, and it sounds like his mom is explaining what's going on here. You want to help her out a bit?
Basically, this is kind of a Q&A session with her son, Truman. This is our friends out at the food farm, and this is an example of one of those pieces of content that wouldn't have existed most likely without this platform. Maybe I can't say that 100%, but it definitely seems like this was tailor-made for this platform, and basically it's just their son answers questions and talks about tractors, and people love it. It's adorable. So these have been fun to see pop up.
Okay, so the questions I'm looking at, I take it this is like your classic Facebook. You got the video. He has walked off from the video, I see, as children tend to do. His empty chair is sitting there at the moment. But anyway, then there's people who have questions that they send in, right, as postings. Oh, here's my friend Kathy. What color is your favorite tractor? How old is your oldest tractor?
This is Scoop John Deere. And it has a sweet...
Okay, well, this one is one that doesn't translate the best on the radio, but it is cute and endearing.
Okay.
So, as you said, you don't know if this would exist if there weren't such a platform. So, I get it. He's a star in the making. Here's one also that is, well, I was about to say more visual art, but it's tactile, isn't it? Lake Superior Art Glass. So, let's see what they have.
Hey, folks. Welcome to your morning fireside chat. Lake Superior Art Glass here, coming live this Tuesday morning. Gonna do a custom pendant today. We've got our Design Your Own Pendant event happening, and so we had a request come in to have a heart pendant with a cross etched into it. So that's what I'll be doing today. It's gonna be a cobalt blue heart. And got a couple different options here. So
this is the ultimate manifestation of this old house. Only instead of telling you how to tear down your garage, he's telling you how to make a glass pendant with a blowtorch, correct?
Yes, exactly. I think that so many Duluthians, one of their favorite things to do, I know it is one of my favorite things to do, is to go to Lake Superior Art Glass and watch them making these amazing works of art. And so it seemed like a natural fit, like that they had to get on board with this. And it's just blown up. They've been doing one, I think, every day, basically, and people just love watching it. And I'm so glad that we can bring this for people who, you know, can't go to the glass store right now.
Mm-hmm. The age-old question, what does hot glass taste like?
Okay, do not try this with your own hot glass. All right, but we hear his blowtorch, and he's looks very educational. So, great. Next, we have Brian Barber's Draw Along. So I'm taking it that this one is also something. Here we go. It's visual with a little intro music. I'm seeing a sort of etch-a-sketch version of a Stratocaster guitar being created in front of me here. So
yeah,
what do we
so
have here?
This is artist Brian Barber, and basically right when this thing started, he's been putting out these very simple draw-along videos, and it's just, you know, it's just some music and then a very quick sketch that children can draw along with and then post them back up on the site. So that's really cool. It's been kind of a staple since day one of Virtual Duluth, and people really like it. Mm-hmm. I want it to be an accurate representation of the Twin Ports on Virtual Duluth.
Well, I'm looking at the site right now, and you've got a whole schedule starting from 9 a.m. to 8 p.m. So 9 a.m. was Power Flow Yoga. At 10 a.m., you had the Great Camp Cooking Show from the YMCA. 11 a.m., Weicker Acres Farm Tour. 12, there was Zumba. And then you had crafts, chia seed pudding recipe class. Okay, I didn't know we had that even before we had Virtual Duluth. In short, you got everything, and this is a programming schedule. And boy, if this goes on too long, I'm imagining you're going to have different sub-channels and networks going on here.
Yeah, it's going to become even bigger, and it's going to be something that I need to think of how we can organize this and how we can archive it. I think that's going to be the really important thing, because obviously this is a major event in history, and I think we want to look back and be able to see what it was we were doing during this time.
Right. And one thing that you are doing is hosting the Superior Shorts Festival. Tell us about that. This was something that was going on anyway and now has migrated to Virtual Duluth. All right. Well, we're speaking with Matt Dressel. He's the creator of Virtual Duluth. It can be found at facebook.com/groups/virtualduluth. And thank you for joining us.
Yes, thank you for having me.
Here's an offering shared googles of times from violinist Wren Aurelia Cooper. We'll be back after this. Welcome back to Simply Superior. I'm Robin Washington, and I'm joined by Brooks Johnson of the Star Tribune's North Report team and our own Superior-based reporter for Wisconsin Public Radio, Danielle Kading. Hello, Brooks.
Hello.
And hi, Danny.
Hi, Robin.
So the big news this week, other than the virus itself, is about cancellations, and the biggest of all in the region, Grandma's Marathon. What's this mean, Brooks?
Ooh, this means that more than 20,000 participants won't be coming to town and bringing their families and onlookers, possibly giving a major economic hit to hotels, restaurants, and others that depended on that traffic on a yearly basis. It's the first time in 44 years, what would have been their 44th year, that the event has been canceled for any reason.
And no refunds?
No refunds, and, you know, organizers say that's sort of par for the course for these types of events. They are participants for 2021 race. We'll get discounts, you know, this is just sort of what they have to do to stay afloat.
Right. Well, the other big one locally is the postponement until 2021 of the 100th anniversary commemoration of the Duluth lynching. The main part of that was a call for 10,000 people to gather at the site of the lynching at 1st Street and 2nd Avenue East as a symbolic response to the thousands who participated in the crime 100 years ago. Obviously, a crowd like that wouldn't be a good idea right now.
Right. Organizers thought that they announced it earlier this week that, you know, for the health and safety of the community and to do full justice to the memory of those three men who were lynched on the streets of Duluth 100 years ago in June, they would really want to just do the full program they had intended next year rather than postponing it to later this year with questions about how long the pandemic is going to linger. June 15, 2021 will be the site of 10,000 plus people gathering to commemorate that event.
Right. Well, the Clayton Jackson McGee Memorial Committee was also going to bring Brian Stevenson to town. He's the founder of the Equal Justice Initiative and also the creator of the National Memorial for Peace and Justice, which is also known as the National Lynching Memorial. Is he still going to make it?
I've heard that pretty much everything has been postponed and they are rescheduling some events to become virtual and online, but most of the major draws were going to be postponed to next year.
Full disclosure time. My wife has long been involved with the committee and organized a commemoration concert earlier this year. And I, too, am involved. The Alabama 35 radio documentary is something I produced with Henry Banks in 2018 about the Twin Ports delegation to the opening of the National Memorial. The documentary was supposed to be presented in a community setting. We'll now have it rebroadcast on the air on Simply Superior on May 15th. So, Danny, there's even a bigger event in Wisconsin. What's going on with the Democratic National Convention?
Yeah, well, in Wisconsin this week, the talk has really been about the election because Wisconsin's primary is coming up next week. And this week, the Democratic National Committee decided to postpone the Democratic National Convention in July until the week of August 17th. And this comes after prospective presidential candidate Joe Biden said that it would be hard to envision the DNC in July, given what we're dealing with right now with the coronavirus pandemic. But he also said that, you know, Democrats have some more time to figure things out. And then he told Jimmy Kimmel that he thought maybe the DNC should be pushed from July into August because of the pandemic. You know, heading into the primary next week, his opponent, Bernie Sanders, has said that Wisconsin should join more than a dozen other states and delay their election and extend early voting. And there's been a lot of discussion about that in Wisconsin in the last couple of weeks. And there have been some lawsuits that have been filed as well. And actually, it looks like a federal judge is signaling he won't postpone or make any changes to the spring election to alleviate those concerns about voters being potentially exposed to the virus at the polls or poll workers themselves contracting the coronavirus. And that's an issue because a lot of poll workers in Wisconsin are older, and they're the ones that are more likely to experience complications if they contract the virus. And in fact, the governor has said this week that the National Guard will be helping out and manning the polls next week for the primary election because they are short thousands of poll workers in more than 100 communities. They're saying they don't have enough staff to even manage one polling location. So the election has been a really big deal this week as it relates to this ongoing coronavirus pandemic.
So polls would seem to be a difficult place, or can we say challenging, to practice social distancing, right?
Yeah, I mean, they have been taking steps like, you know, putting tape up to mark 6 feet so that people are having the correct spacing, and they've had hand sanitizer and frequent cleaning of polling locations. They've been prepping for that. But, you know, just with the shortage alone, like Burnett County, which is up here in northern Wisconsin, they say they have about 150 poll workers and that a significant number of them are older. And so that they've been asking for people to help out there. Superior has said that they are going to have poll workers staffing at the bare minimum, and they're encouraging people to vote early. The governor has encouraged people to vote early. So, yeah, they're definitely trying to minimize any potential spread of the virus through this election next week.
So it's still a challenge. Brooks, you had an item about a special request by the Duluth Police Department for people not to call 911 when they see a business violating the stay-at-home order. What's this all about?
Well, you're definitely not supposed to call 911, as the Duluth Police Department has pointed out. They do want people to, you know, sort of self-enforce at this point violations. So if they see a bar that's open and there's people sitting in there clearly violating the governor's order, they shouldn't call 911.
Instead, to call 651-793-3746 or email shviolations@state.mn.us.
Right. It's not an emergency. It is a violation, however, of the order. So they want, you know, the proper officials to find out, but they don't want to take resources away from emergency.
You know, and as far as how people perceive the officials at the local, state, or federal level to be handling this, there was a poll this week from the Marquette University Law School, and they found that 86% of Wisconsin voters who were surveyed said that they felt it was appropriate to be closing schools and businesses, and that a majority of voters, 76%, actually supported Governor Tony Evers' response to the pandemic. And despite, you know, as we're seeing rising number of unemployment claims, 61% felt that the state was heading in the right direction in trying to control the spread of this disease.
All right. And that's our roundup of regional news. We've been speaking with Brooks Johnson of the Star Tribune's North Report team. Thank you, Brooks.
Thanks so much, Robin.
You can read these stories by Brooks and the Star Tribune's entire Twin Ports Bureau at www.startribune.com/North Report. And be sure to subscribe to their local newsletter. We've also been joined by my colleague, Danielle Kading, the Superior-based reporter for Wisconsin Public Radio News. Thank you, Danny.
Thanks, Robin.
And that's it for this edition of Simply Superior. I'm Robin Washington. We received production help from Allison Wade and technical support from John Talcott. Paul Damberg is our executive producer, and the show is a production of Wisconsin Public Radio. Our theme music was composed by Bruce Nelson of South Range. And by now, you've probably heard several songs about the pandemic. We'll leave you with this one, sent to me by online listener Mary Berryhill in Northwest Illinois by one of her neighbors, Dave Cuckler, with Don't Let That Corona Get You Down.
Stay in, don't go, know what you're doing, do it slow. Don't let that corona get you down. I read a book, take a nap, yeah, you know that's where it's at. And don't let that corona get you down. Stay in, stay home, don't you go to work. Doctor says that it just might make it even worse. So stay home, don't go. But what you're doing, do it slow. And don't let that corona get you down. Get on the phone, write a line, or you can even go home.